The Church of God, the Eternal, presents the 60-second message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled, Just What Do You Mean, Faith Once Delivered? Given in Eugene, Oregon, June 3rd, 2023.
All right, the last time I spoke with you here, we were picking up that, or blowing the dust off of the series on the Genesis creation, and I had to give you a little bit of a re-review after about 8 to 9 months of kind of going into a hiatus. So last time, if you recall, I reiterated a very brief summary on our belief, which is counted, by the way, as the faith once delivered, which is why it's a part of this overall series, Just What Do You Mean, the Faith Once Delivered? And so we talked about what the world, the fundamentalists especially, call the gap theory. It's what we just simply call the truth of what happened with the origin of the physical earth and major events that took place upon that earth as revealed in the Bible. Now, God didn't make it absolutely plain. A lot of those pieces are hidden and obscured, so that it does require revelation through a chosen servant in order to put the pieces together. But isn't that true of many of the things that we believe? Sure it is. And so we've gone through the technicalities to reaffirm what the radio church, which became the Worldwide Church of God, taught concerning the events described in the very first verses of the book of Genesis in chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, and this gap that exists between the original beautiful, glorious creation of the earth and then a catastrophe that occurred to destroy it, leading to a recreation, which begins to be described then in the rest of Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2. So we've been through all of that. Last time we reviewed that basic belief about the Genesis creation, the destruction that was caused by Satan's rebellion, and then the recreation following, all described in those beginning chapters. And we began to analyze next the arguments of those who say that we are wrong. So there's these fundamentalists, they're called young earth creationists, YECs, who absolutely believe that what we teach concerning that creation story is heresy. They hate it because they believe that the earth itself is no older than 6,000 or so years old. Therefore, that dinosaurs existed on the earth at the same time as man, and that they only died out because they weren't reproduced after Noah's flood. Okay, so what I have emphasized to you is that their fallacy and the reason they are wrong and what they do not get from all of the other texts in the Bible that can be put together, the fallacy of these detractors, as I'm calling them, is the lack of understanding about God's original government assignment to Lucifer. They never mention it. They never talk about or acknowledge the fact that Lucifer was given preeminence over this earth. Long before man ever was put on it, it was given as an assignment. And let's reaffirm that by looking at Jude chapter 6. And if you don't think Jude chapter 6 confirms this, then you need to have another explanation for what it says here. Jude 6, the angels which kept not their first estate. And this word in the Greek, estate, means a principality. So like it or not, this says God gave two angels a principality. That's a government institution over some sort of a realm. And if it wasn't over this earth, you tell me what it was. The angels did have a principality, and it was over this earth. The angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation. So they were given an assignment by God. It was a principality. And under the auspices of God, they were assigned to take care of it and to keep it and to maintain it in the name of God. And instead, they rebelled. And that you find in the book of Isaiah and the book of Ezekiel, and we've been through all of that. The rebellion, Lucifer's fall, if you will, when he turned in rebellion and then sought to make himself equal with God. And the Bible's very plain. I'm not going back through those texts, which show that he literally attempted to assault the throne of God and take over and was thrust back down. So you tell me, with all of the other texts, including in the book of Revelation, that talks about Satan being cast down. Cast back, cast down where? Cast down to the earth. Because the earth is the center stage for this play. That's where it's all happened, including the activity of angels. So that's where this principality was. It was originally assigned to angels who did not fulfill their responsibility. They rebelled, and that's how Lucifer became Satan the devil. So these young earth creationists, believe it or not, they will not address it. They believe, they try to say that Adam was the first one to commit a sin. Why do they say that? Romans 5 verse 12. This is what happens when people cherry pick certain verses out of the Bible and then try to form their own concept around it without putting it in context. Romans 5 verse 12 says, wherefore, as by one man, sin entered into the world. Aha, they see. The very first sin that ever happened in the entire universe was committed by Adam and no one else. It wasn't Lucifer. Adam committed the very first sin ever. As by one man, sin entered into the world and death by sin. And so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. Aha, they say. So Adam's sin had to come first, followed by the sin of Lucifer, which they have to acknowledge is true. So basically what they say is, well, Adam sinned first and then Lucifer sinned quickly thereafter. Now, how do you get that when we already went through the Genesis description in chapter 3 to describe? And one, if you're going to say Adam was the first one to sin, well, I thought Genesis said that Eve was the first one to sin. So there's another problem with the interpretation if you want to be that exacting about it. But assuming you're just putting Adam and Eve together in their collective sin to rebel against God and to take of the forbidden fruit, okay, fine. Then they have to force in the sin of Lucifer somewhere after that, which is absurd because the first sin of Eve happened because of the enticement of the serpent. He was already in rebellion against God, and they don't address that either. They won't address it. So there's holes in all these interpretations of these young earth creationists, and they refuse to acknowledge the truth in the Bible. So they take pot shots at the gap theory and say it doesn't hold water. But what I started to do in the last installment was to go through and to start to address their specific statements and their accusations or challenges, if you will, their claims. What are we talking about? Is by one man centered into the world? We're talking about in the human realm. We're not talking about what happened with the angels. That's totally separate. That's not what the Apostle Paul is even addressing. This is not saying the first sin that ever took place in the universe was by Adam. It's talking about with the human family, which is what the Bible was written for. So Adam was the first human being who sinned. Well, Eve and Adam together, but Lucifer was the first angel who sinned, and that happened way before in the timeline. So they don't get all of these pieces, and they cannot then make them all line up. What we believe and what we were taught in the Radio Church of God perfectly puts all of these pieces together in harmony. It really is a beautiful tapestry. So 2 Peter verse 2 and 4, just to recap the recap, if you will. The other thing is, Romans 5:12 is not talking about the angelic rebellion because that didn't result in death, did it? Paul is addressing death as a result of sin. Well, angels are immortal beings as God created them, which means when they sin, the penalty for their rebellion was not death. So, again, you put that into context and you say that's a separate discussion in Romans 5:12. Okay, 2 Peter 2:4 says, for if God spared not the angels that sinned. So there's confirmation angels sin. The question is, where was it compared to Adam's sin? If God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell, and that just means to the grave, They don't die in the grave, but you are talking about an earthly domain, which is where they are, and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment. So the hell that the angels are subject to is a different word. It doesn't even mean grave. It's Tartaru. It means a place of restraint, and that's what's being described here. So that's their end result is going to be a permanent place of restraint where they cannot carry out their nefarious deceptions and rebellions anymore. Those are different parts of the faith once delivered. All right. So again, my summary is the reason that these well-meaning fundamentalist Christians, quote unquote, make a mistake and cannot put the pieces together to see the truth is because they fundamentally don't understand the story of Lucifer's rebellion. They do not acknowledge that he was given domain over the earth, that a rebellion happened which resulted in the destruction of the physical earth, and that was part of him lashing out, whether, you know, in the course of this war with God's holy angels or whatever, or whether he was like a child throwing a tantrum, and therefore if God told me to take care of the earth, I'm going to do the opposite. That makes perfect sense to me too. So the outcome was that this physical earth, the surface of it, was absolutely destroyed. Rather than being taken care of and tended, it was absolutely destroyed. So it was originally created in glory by God. We've read in the book of Job where the angels shouted for joy at the creation of the earth. And yet it ended up tohu and bohu, chaotic and confused. And so our explanation, absolutely consistent with Genesis 1, 1 and 2, is that it came that way through angelic rebellion. And what you ended up was a wasteland upon the surface of this earth. It ultimately became covered in water. So now our detractors say we have a philosophy concerning a Luciferic flood. And I'll accept that, because the end result, as we find in the first part of Genesis, is that the waters covered the face of the deep. Okay, so the earth, there was no dry land. It was completely absorbed in water. So I'll call that a Luciferic flood if you want. It was an outcome of their rebellion. It wasn't the same as Noah's flood, by the way, because in that case, all life except those who were upon that ark died because of rising water. Now, what the geologic history shows, and what we're going to cover today, is the fact that that pre-Adamic world, that's what the scientists call it, and I don't have a problem calling it that, the early world that existed when God first created the earth and all of the plants and the animals upon that earth during the days that Lucifer was first assigned as its caretaker, that world now then was totally different, and as we're going to see, was not planned then for the habitation of man. God created it in mind. It was always going to be the habitation of man. And Jesus Christ, by the way, don't ever forget, was slain before the foundation of the world. So if Christ was in the plan to become a savior for mankind, that means mankind was always in the thinking of God before the earth came into existence. However, when he first created it, the kind of plants and the animals and the habitation physically that he put on this planet were not suitable for man. I'm going to show you that. The scientists, actually, based upon the geology, support it. And then what happened is that first creative work was destroyed, and the end result was that it had to be recreated, which is what Genesis 1 and 2 actually show us. So it ended up with a flood, but the geology shows that it wasn't just rising water that destroyed that first world. Rising water destroyed life in the days of Noah. We're going to cover that in the next installment. We're going to focus today on whatever evidence that we have from geology to confirm what happened to the first world, that pre-Adamic world. All right, in order to do that, I want to go back through three of the arguments of the detractors that I summarized from some of these young earth creationists very quickly to put us back into cognizance of what we're defeating. So here's the arguments against our belief in the gap theory And now we're going to pick that apart. But first one here, they say, the gap theory contradicts modern unbelieving geology. That's what they say. They say, although gap theorists attempt to harmonize Genesis with modern geology, the proposed harmonization will not work. Modern geology, they say, is based upon the idea of uniformitarianism. Remember, I mentioned that last time. All processes, this is a definition, all processes that we observe today have continued at the same rate from the beginning. Since the present rates are the same as the past, there is no room for a worldwide catastrophe. The geological ages cannot be separated from the theory of evolution. That's a false claim. So remember, I also showed you last time, our belief, and the faith once delivered, says we're not afraid of science, and we're not afraid of the facts of the geological record upon this earth. That does not mean that we accept the conclusions of the scientists, because they are virtually all evolutionists. So when we look at the history of the earth physically, from the true geology, what are we doing? We're reading the literature of the scientists. They're evolutionists. But we're picking apart the difference between what they see in the physical record and then how they interpret it according to their false religion. Evolutionary theory is a religion. It's a belief about the origins that does not include a God. So as you understand, they believe that life sprang spontaneously in small, simple cell creatures out of the deep or some murky soup, and then ultimately evolved over millions and even billions of years into more and more complex creatures, which ultimately spawned into sea life and fish, and then the fish grew legs and walked out of the ocean and became, you know, everything else you see, the birds and ultimately the primates, and that turned into man. Okay, so that's evolution. That's your uniformitarianism, which means there's a uniform connection from the very beginning of this process with very simple life forms that continued all the way forward over millions and even billions of years. So the fundamentalist Christians say, if we attempt at all to reconcile geology through these evolutionary scientists, we're buying into their uniformitarianism. Not true. We reject their interpretation of what happened according to their false religion, their atheistic religion. But they reveal incredibly valuable pieces of information when they document what they actually find in the earth. The actual geology, and you separate their admission of what exists in the earth crust from their interpretation of it according to their false ideas, then you can come up with the truth. And we're not afraid of the truth of geology. That's why I read you that quote from the old church literature that said, good science will always support the Bible. The Bible is true and what God revealed is true, so we're not afraid of the physical record and the geology of the layers of the earth. And so we're going to show that today. So they say, the fundamentalists say, no, there's no connection. And that's geological ages that we're going to talk about cannot be separated from the theory of evolution. Oh, yes, it can. The history of fossils that have been preserved in layers of the earth can then be talked about without buying into the evolutionary theories about how they got there. And that's what we're going to do today. So no, modern evolutionary theory is based upon uniformitarianism, but not the actual geological evidence. That's what I'm going to show you. Okay. They next say, point two or point B, which is throwing down the gauntlet for us, the connection between geology and Genesis is a problem because Genesis, they say, involves a recreation, according to what we believe, because we claim Genesis involves a recreation and the present day fossils belong to a destroyed world. There can be no correlation between scripture and geology. Oh, yes, there can. They say, oh no, there can't be. They say the Bible, therefore, has absolutely nothing to say about the subject. Therefore, it is entirely in the hands of geologists, and we of necessity must believe what they tell us about the geological record. Meaning, if you're going to give any credence to physical geology, then you have to buy into everything, and it's totally contradictory to what the Bible says. That's patently false. I'm going to show that to you. There is absolute correlation between the scriptures and the earth's geology, and the gap theory is the one that is supported in the Bible and in the geological record. I'll prove that. Thirdly, they say, the gap theory discounts the Genesis flood. They say that if the present-day fossils are a result of a luciferic flood, an original catastrophe that destroyed it long before man was put on the earth, that happened with this gap between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2, then one must assume that Noah's flood left no trace whatsoever. That's what they say, and that's not true at all. They say the fossil evidence can better be explained by a flood that we know existed rather than a flood which Scripture does not mention. So they say there's no evidence for two catastrophes. The original one that where the angels destroyed the earth, followed by a recreation, and then Noah's flood. I'm here to tell you that the earth's geology provides support for both a pre-Adamic catastrophe as well as a later catastrophe that is ascribed to Noah's flood. They are both there. We're going to talk about the pre-Adamic destruction of the angels today, and then in the next installment, my plan is, if I get through this, we'll talk about the fossil record from Noah's flood and how it is distinguished from the deeper layers that tell about a catastrophe that happened long before man was on the earth. All right, what are the sources from church literature that I'm going to use? And basically, all I'm doing is going back and summarizing from the old radio and Worldwide Church of God literature, which I find still holds up today, more than 50 years later, very well, by the way. I'm going to make that claim, but you are very well suggested to go back and read these articles yourselves. There's four main articles, and the one that I'm going to refer to today in detail is the Plain Truth article from November 1963 entitled Dinosaurs Before Adam. We're going to read a lot from that. Other ones that I suggest that you read, these are all from the Plain Truth magazine, by the way, so they were written basically for people in the world, not like the Good News magazine that was written primarily for church members. All of these were in the Plain Truth. The next one was February 1964, so literally 3 months after the first article, another one came out entitled Geology Reveals Two Creations, Two Worldwide Floods. And then January 1970, an article entitled The Day the Dinosaurs Died. And then May 1977, one entitled Dinosaur World. All these have a lot of good information. There's a lot of duplicates, one from the other. What I'm trying to do is succinctly summarize the key points and to keep this as simple as possible. Because as you understand, it's a complex subject to try and take science and geology and records of fossils and dinosaur ages and all this kind of stuff and keep your eyes from crossing and going to sleep or whatever else. So that's my challenge. It's taken me a lot of time to put this material together because of trying to do it in a way that will simplify it and make it like a Cliff Notes version, if you will, that's easier to absorb the big points. So those are the accusations, that there is no, that if this catastrophe pre-Adam destroyed the earth once, then that means we can't prove there was a second catastrophe that the Bible does talk about in Noah's flood. And my answer is, yes, we can. There were two, and the geology actually shows there were two separate catastrophes. The scientists acknowledge it. They don't acknowledge Noah's flood at all. They don't believe the Bible, but they acknowledge what they find in the fossil records. So we're going to look at that. All right. Most geologists are wrong in their conclusions, meaning we don't accept. We don't accept at face value what these evolutionary scientists say, and we don't accept what these well-meaning fundamentalist Christians say either. They each have nuggets of the truth, but the truth You've got to put the pieces together and then you get it correct. And no one else does except those basically who are willing to be honest with it. So most geologists are wrong in their conclusions because they seek to prove evolutionary theory. They see the facts in the ground and then interpret it according to their false religion. Young Earth creationists, these YECs, are wrong in their conclusions because they seek to denigrate any geological evidence that says the Earth is more than 6,000 years old. They reject at the beginning the idea that the Earth is older than 6,000 years, which means anything that says otherwise, they reject. That's why they're both wrong. So the articles that I just listed to you from the Plain Truth magazine from 1963 through 1977 analyze the facts of the real geology presented, sifting out the conclusions based upon theoretical bias. All right, how are we going to organize the geological evidence? Here's, by the way, for those of you that are looking at this for the video, Dinosaurs Before Adam. This is from that old 1963, and this is what it looks like. If you go back to the old issue of the Plain Truth, and this is what I'm quoting from today. Organizing the geological evidence. So I wanted to start first to say, before I dive into the specifics of this article from the Plain Truth, all right, what do the evolution scientists, geologists, paleontologists, what do they believe? And I wanted to try to capture their succinct summary. Now, we've already kind of analyzed what these young Earth creationist Sunday keepers believe, but what do the evolutionists say? And we want to compare, and we've got a foundation from which we can work from. So I tried to find a single source that would make it simple. And what I found was the United States Geological Survey has a website. So this is a science-based division of the United States government, which does all of this, all right? And I thought they had a pretty, and it's almost like they wrote this for school-age children to try and summarize what they call the truth about the history of the Earth, okay? So they have, on that website, they have a subsection called the Geological Time Spiral. And this is what it says. Here's their words. The Earth is very old, 4.5 billion years or more, according to scientific estimates. Most of the evidence, they say, for an ancient Earth is contained in the rocks that form the Earth's crust. The rock layers themselves, like pages in a long and complicated history, record the events of the past, and buried within them are the remains of life, the plants and animals that evolved from organic structures that existed 3 billion years ago. So you see where they're coming from. They go on to say, also contained in rocks, once molten, are radioactive elements whose isotopes provide Earth with an atomic clock. Within these rocks, parent, quote-unquote, isotopes decay at a predictable rate to form daughter, quote-unquote, isotopes. By determining the relative amounts of parent and daughter isotopes, the age of these rocks can be calculated. Thus, the scientific evidence from rock layers, from fossils, and from the ages of rocks as measured by atomic clocks attests to a very old Earth. So stopping right there, we don't disagree that the Earth is old. Do we acknowledge that it's 4.5 billion years old? No. I don't know, and I don't think they know. So I'll give credence to, we have no problem with the idea that scientifically they can compare the relative age of one rock to another by the amount of emitting radiation still coming out of it, these isotopes. But that doesn't mean at all that they have an accurate yardstick on which to measure the distance between those. I don't believe that at all. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. They get it wrong when they try and give us an age for human bones, when they say that they find humanoid bones that are 100 million years old, they're dead wrong. But I don't, and we do not then assume that they're wrong in the relative idea of the age of an old Earth. Now, also on this United States Geological Survey website, they then start talking about these relative ages that are found in the rock layers, all right? So now we get into this stuff that'll make your eyes cross. They start with what's called the Phanerozoic Eon. I've never heard of that before. I only mention it because you've heard of the Paleozoic era, the Mesozoic era, the Cenozoic. You've heard of those. But this Phanerozoic Eon, I'm like, what is that? They define that as the most recent 541 million years of geologic time where fossil evidence of complex, abundant life is found. Okay, why is that important? They think the Earth itself is 4.5 billion years old, but they distinguish that complex life is only perhaps 541 million years old. Now, what do we conclude from that? Well, we understand that when God first brought into existence the earth and created it a beautiful physical habitat under the rule of the angels, it was filled with complex life, don't we? There was no evolutionary process over billions of years of little one-celled organisms that expanded and evolved over time. When it came into existence, it came into existence fully with complex life forms, animals and plants. So they acknowledge what they think is that explosion of complex life that happened at the beginning of this Phanerozoic Eon. In other words, they pick that, the last 500 million years, as the period that they think complex life existed on the earth. I would interpret that to say that's what we would, if their timeline is correct, that's really how old the earth is. I'm not saying that's how old the earth is. Not 4.5 billion years old, which allowed time. Why do they say that? To give time for these one-celled organisms to evolve into the complex life they see that they think started 500 million years ago. We know it all came into existence in a complex form by the creation of God. So let's say that was 541 million years ago, just for argument's sake. All right? How is this whole 500 million Phanerozoic Eon divided up? Okay, they divide them up into these eras. So all we're doing, and we don't need to understand or know these, there's three of them I want to ask you to write down. The Paleozoic era, the Mesozoic era, and the Cenozoic era, because I'm going to be reading a lot of material for you that uses these terms. They define the Paleozoic era as the time of these small creatures called trilobites. And if I remember right, and I didn't remember to look this up, I think they say these were all destroyed in that original catastrophe and did not come back. I could be wrong about that. But this was the era of trilobites, which are a group of arthropods similar to horseshoe crabs that ranged in size, they say, from small coins even up to the size of a tire, and lived in the sea. Okay, so they have these fragments or these fossils of these sea creatures that are extinct, and they're in the lower levels of complex life forms, followed by what they call the Mesozoic era. So write this down. The Mesozoic era equals dinosaurs. That's what we're talking about, the age of the dinosaurs, which followed this period of the Paleozoic era. And then after the age of the dinosaurs is what they call the Cenozoic era. They define that as the age of the mammals. So you got trilobites, followed by dinosaurs, followed by mammals. And what the scientists claim is that the Earth geology shows the one was there, and then the dinosaurs came next, and then the mammals came later. Now, we take exception to that, and I'll read you from the church literature. They make a mistake because what they think is two separate eras with Paleozoic and Mesozoic were really all part of the same. They say each era is split into even smaller parts known as periods and epochs. These boundaries, they say, were first defined by the appearance or disappearance, either the evolution or extinction of fossil species in rocks. In other words, so how did they decide that there's these eras that were key in the history of the Earth? It has to do with either the explosion of life that seems to have happened at a certain point in time, or the total extinction or mass extinctions that happened at points in time, which are revealed in the geology. So they picked out these points in the geological record where a lot of things all of a sudden existed that didn't exist before, or else a lot of things died. And those became the boundaries for these eras. Just so you know how they think and what we're talking about. They say that is why mass extinctions commonly define the boundaries between geologic ages. Mass extinctions commonly define the boundaries between geologic ages. And this is good for us, because we believe there was a mass extinction that happened with the rebellion of the angels, and we believe there was a second mass extinction what happened in Noah's flood, don't we? The geologists acknowledge these things are true. What else do they say happened during the end of the, I'm going to jump ahead to the end of the Mesozoic era, meaning the end of the age of the dinosaurs. There's this demarcation between the end of the age of reptiles and then the emergence of mammals. And then there's things get muddy between the end of the one and the beginning of the other, as far as the geologists are concerned. They say a large meteorite crashed into the Gulf of Mexico 66 million years ago, causing a massive tsunami and a climate disruption that killed up to 80% of the world's animals and plant species. The last of the dinosaurs, they say, being the most noticeable victims, this mass extinction event separates the Mesozoic from the Cenozoic era. So they acknowledge a mass extinction event. Now, why did they say it only killed 80%? Because of their false belief in evolution. Remember, here's what the young earth creationists say. See, they believe in uniformitarianism, that life evolved from the beginning to end. There was no total mass extinction because it continued to evolve all the way to the present day. So they can't believe that there was a 100% extinction of everything living on the earth 61 million years ago or whatever. They have to think some survived. So where did this 80% come from? Well, ultimately, I'll read you some more. So from the age of the reptiles, now we have reptiles on the earth today, right? Snakes, lizards, turtles, you know, alligators, crocodiles, those are all reptiles. So the scientists say, see, those are ones who carried, they're the ones who survived this mass extinction of the original reptiles in the Mesozoic era. They didn't all die because we've got reptiles today to prove that a small percentage of them carried forward. It was just the smaller ones, all the big ones died. So somehow they came up with 80%. It was an 80% extinction, not a 100% extinction. What do you and I know? It was a 100% extinction of every living thing on the planet during the rebellion of Satan. All right, so they get close, but they fail to admit that all life on Earth was destroyed, not just 80% of it. All right, now I'm going to start reading from this November 1963 article from The Plain Truth entitled Dinosaurs Before Adam. Here's how we interpret it. Quote, take a brief walk through any natural history museum. It will reveal a vast array of charts and fossils depicting the theory of organic evolution. Geology, you will be told, provides evidence of a succession of life forms in the strata of the earth. I'll stop right there. That's this uniformitarianism, a succession. It's like a handing, a passing of the baton of living organisms from the very beginning all the way through uninterrupted. So our article, all the way back in 1963, acknowledges this is what these evolutionists believe. Continue on, but does the record of the rocks really show this? Do the facts of science substantiate these, quote, scientific theories? Furthermore, it is claimed the Earth is billions of years old, and the fossil record, the aged bones, tracks, and other remains of extinct animals and plants, proves that life has been evolving over millions of years. Why have scientists reburied the facts only to resurrect them in the image of their evolutionary theories? This article explains why. In other words, so this article is going to kick in the head the conclusions of the evolutionists, but preserve the value of what they found in the geology. They go on to say, life, according to these scientists, began in what they call the ancient Cryptozoic Eon. So that's the one that preceded the one where they find complex life. Then it says, as it is supposedly slowly developed into many different kinds of life, these developing, quote unquote, plants and animals were buried in the rocks and became fossils. But do we find a record of developing fossils, a record of halfway developed plants and animals in successive order? The answer is no. Meaning, stopping right there, there's no evidence of evolution. There's no evidence of half-formed things that were evolving from a simple to a complex form. All you have is proof of complex forms exploding onto the scene in the Earth's history, because that's the way God made it. Going on, the article says, actually, the divisions of the geologic timescale, which you will see in any museum, do not really represent great elapses of time. They depict rather thick sedimentary layers which were deposited quickly to preserve fossils. But scientists say evolution is a very slow process. Therefore, the evolutionist, in order to prove his theory, creates different eons, eras, periods, epochs, and ages to allow what he considers sufficient time for evolution to occur. These vast theoretical units of time, which evolutionists have allowed in the geological time scale, do not represent a succession of life forms in successive eras. They show instead the relative order in which life died during two great worldwide destructions, both of which are mentioned in the Bible. So there's our claim. As opposed to the evolutionists, that the geology shows two great mass extinctions. So first, in this article is an inset within the article with an excellent summary, and it's several pages in, just to show you, it's like one of the later pages in this issue on page 26 of the article. And it's got this graph that kind of puts this, describes the difference in the Mesozoic and Paleozoic eras versus the Cenozoic. The age of the trilobites and the reptiles as opposed to the age of mammals. So first of all, the Mesozoic and Paleozoic, here's what our article says. Fossil remains from the pre-Adamic world are found buried in a relative order, with the rocks on the bottom generally containing sea life, because the sea life was first destroyed and buried. Then later, as the terrifying destruction of life enveloped the land, as dinosaurs and other land life forms were covered by heavy sediment from raging waters. These last deposits of the pre-Adamic world, the so-called Mesozoic era in term Cretaceous, some Cretaceous strata have been mislabeled, and in reality belong to the Cenozoic or Age of Man. So I told you, the very last of the Age of Reptiles versus what they call mammals, which was the creation of man, those are mixed up to a certain extent, and they get confused on what was a part of which world. I believe that one of the reasons for that, and I'll probably mention it more in the next one when it comes to Noah's flood. What was one of the things that happened during Noah's flood? Fountains came up from the deep, didn't it? It wasn't just rain that came down out of the sky. There were fountains that came up in the deep. What happens when you have a water main under the ground break? Have you ever seen a big pipe in a town or a city break, and all of a sudden this water is pushing out? What happens? It creates a big old hole, and everything gets mixed around. So what if these fountains from the deep took certain amounts of things from a earlier time and mixed them up with things in a later time? They redeposit, and now man is trying to say, well, this is lower down, so that had to come before this. In some cases, yes, it's true. In other cases, no, it's not. So I'll probably talk more about that when we cover Noah's flood, and that's geologic record, but just keep that in mind. Our article says this Mesozoic world, the age of dinosaurs and reptiles, The time before man's creation was so characterized by dinosaurs and other reptiles that scientists have rightly called it the Age of Reptiles. Giant reptiles, some weighing probably up to 40 tons, not only roamed the land but flew in the air, while yet others excelled the fishes of the sea. Gigantic insects filled the air, giant tree ferns, horsetails, club mosses, cycads, and conifers covered the face of the earth, creating vast forests unlike any we know today. In that world were no true mammals. Take note of this. This is what the geology shows. In that world, the age of the reptiles, were no true mammals. No fish with true scales, no feathered fowl, no grass, no grains or fruit for man. Man was not then in existence. The so-called Paleozoic rocks, those oldest ones with complex life forms, layers containing sea life, therefore do not represent a separate time apart from the Mesozoic. Paleozoic rocks merely contain the buried remains of sea life that was first to be destroyed consequent to Lucifer's rebellion. The characteristic fossils found in Paleozoic rocks are ammonites, trilobites, sea scorpions, sharks, and other unedible fishes. Many were giant varieties. This was the entire world unfit for human habitation and enjoyment. All life was suddenly buried. Most life forms were never recreated when God reformed the earth and made this world habitable for man. Okay, so that's our claim. That's what we believe is true. That the rebellion of Lucifer killed everything, 100% of it. The sea life was first by the fossil records, is at the lowest level. Now, how did Lucifer's flood happen? I don't know, because, I mean, how much of the world back then was covered in land versus sea? I don't know that either. What caused the whole earth to be covered in water after the rebellion of Lucifer? I don't know. But that's what happened. So you've got all of these. So the scientists think they were two separate eras. No, it was all one existent creation, the original pre-Adamic world that God brought into existence, that was all destroyed virtually at the same time. Okay, then the Cenozoic era. So after the Age of Reptiles, how does our church literature then describe what they call the Cenozoic era or the Age of Mammals? Here's the explanation. What geologists label the Cenozoic era is in reality the age of man, the age of man's existence on the earth. It is characterized by the abundance of animals and plants essential for human survival. Livestock and other mammals, fish and fowl, which provide meat for man, are found buried only in the strata of this age. Fruits, vegetables, and grains are characteristic only of this world and are entirely missing from the pre-Adamic or pre-Cenozoic world. All edible food that is essential for man suddenly appears in the era scientists have dubbed Cenozoic. Even the atmosphere, the climate, and seasons and modern topography, including the present limits of the ocean, are characteristic only of the Cenozoic era. That's a pretty fascinating statement. Can it be backed up? Is this just a plain truth author claiming it? No, he's quoting from the evolutionary scientists, which I'm going to show you. He says here, our world, the so-called Cenozoic, was refashioned from the shambles left after Lucifer's rebellion against God. Fossils found in so-called Cenozoic rocks are generally due to the rapid burial of life forms at the time of Noah's flood, Genesis 7 and 8, or other events since man's creation 6,000 years ago. These Cenozoic or flood deposits are found above other earlier strata laid down in the terrifying catastrophe that befell the world before man existed. The deposits of that earlier world end with the first time of great dying, quote unquote. Now, why did he use the term time of great dying? Because this is what the scientists call it. All right, so now, another part of this article, under a subheading called More Than Dinosaurs. It says, all of these theories need to account for the fact that more than just the dinosaurs mysteriously perished at the same time. The great crisis in the history of life at that time also destroyed the great marine reptiles. And here's all the names of these prehistoric creatures that I have a hard time pronouncing. The ichthyosaurs, plesiosaurs, and the mosasaurs. Now, some of the young people will like get all over me because they know how to pronounce this stuff because they study and I don't. The ichthyosaurs, it says, reached a maximum length of about 15 feet and probably lived in the dimly lit depths of the ocean, yet they too all perished. It wasn't just land a mammal, or they weren't land reptiles like Brontosaurus and T-Rex. Everything in the ocean died too. Plesiosaurs, it says, were the largest marine reptile. These monsters of the seas reached lengths of 40 to 50 feet. Yet the doom of the dinosaurs on land was their destiny as well. 35-foot-long marine lizards, the mosasaurs, found in Cretaceous rocks, died out simultaneously all around the Earth. So it wasn't just in one area. Some of these scientists want to claim, well, there was just a regional catastrophe that killed a bunch of stuff, but things survived on the other side of the world. No, the geological record shows these things died all around the entire globe. Other types of life, it says, in the sea and in the air as well, are totally perished. The great winged dragons, the pterosaurs, had the amazing wingspan of 23 to 25 feet. The final remains of these flying reptiles are found along with the dinosaurs. Their fate was the same. No wonder this period has been called the time of the great dying. Some worldwide event affected life in the air, on the land, and even in the depths of the oceans. This great anomaly confounds all ideas of evolutionary scientists. Remember, we read, they try and say it was only an 80% extinction because they have to believe things survive to keep evolving. We understand the geological record shows it all died. Then he quotes Edwin H. Colbert. Once the world's most eminent paleontologist, explains that, quote, the great extinction that wiped out all of the dinosaurs, large and small, in all parts of the world, and at the same time brought to an end various other lines of reptilian evolution as one of the outstanding events in the history of life and in the history of the earth. So here's an evolutionist, a paleontologist, well respected and renowned, and he acknowledges. That's what the geologic record shows. He says it forms one of the major lines of demarcation in the record of the rocks. That's taken from his article entitled The Age of the Reptiles. That's Colbert, page 191. And he is the one that called this, one of these others here, called it the time of the great dying. Notice this statement from the well-known geology book, Historical Geology, by Carl O. Dunbar. All right, so the first thing I thought was, now I'm reading a plain truth article from 1963, quoting supposed experts. How do I know the plain truth author didn't just pick, you know, a ho-hum evolutionary scientist, set him up as a straw man and destroy his arguments, but it's not really valid as far as a credible scientist who represents the world's, you know, biggies in the scientific and the geologist world. So what I did is I went back and looked up this Carl Dunbar. And this is his resume, if you will, or a succinct description of him. And this is one of the major ones that's being quoted in this Plain Truth article. Who is Carl O. Dunbar? Professor of geology at Yale University from 1929 until 1959. He was also director of the Peabody Museum of Natural History at Yale University from 1942 until 1959, and editor of a textbook series on historical geology from the 1920s through the 1950s. His work was published and sold in over 1 million books. He is a renowned geologist and instructor at Yale and wrote the textbooks that were used to teach. And he is an evolutionist. And yet some of the things that he wrote and the things that he acknowledges are fascinating. So now our Plain Truth article, who's quoting Carl Dunbar, here's what he says about the extinction of dinosaurs. Quote, the end of the Cretaceous, what's the Cretaceous? That's the age at the very end of the age of the reptiles. Okay. The end of the Cretaceous, like the close of the Paleozoic, proved to be a great crisis in the history of life. For example, the dinosaurs were highly varied and apparently adaptive right up to the end of Laramie time. That's another, subdivision of the time. I'm not going to get into that. Yet not one is known to have lived to see the dawn of the Cenozoic era, the modern era. The marine invertebrates did not escape the crisis. So it's interesting that these modern evolutionists want to say that only 80% were destroyed in this very ancient catastrophe. He says nothing escaped. It is difficult, he says, to account for the simultaneous extinction of great tribes of animals so diverse in relationship in the habitats of life. Whatever the cause, the latest Mesozoic, the very end of the Age of Reptiles, was a time of trial when many of the hosts were tried in the balance and found wanting, wanting in adaptiveness to their new environment. Walther, another expert he's referencing, has picturesquely called it the time of the great dying. And he's, now that's a citation from this textbook entitled Historical Geology, page 345 to 348. So the Plain Truth author picked a credible source to represent the evolutionary geological paleontologist theory through the 20th century. And this is what they admit: a mass dying that happened in ancient times that killed all the dinosaurs and everything in the water too. Our article goes on to say, naturally, this evolutionist has couched the time of trial, quote unquote, in great dying in evolutionary language. But the fact remains that great tribes of animals suddenly disappear from the geological record in the last of the Mesozoic rocks without any gradual extinction, as the theory of evolution would require. No gradual death, sudden and complete. The dinosaurs, it says, are an outstanding example of this. Entire books have been written attempting to put forth reasons for the sudden extinction of the dinosaurs. And here's other expert, Colbert, from his book, Dinosaurs, page 259, now as a citation. Quote, at the present time, we can therefore only look upon the problem of extinction of dinosaurs as a hard fact, as a closing of a most spectacular chapter in the history of life on the earth, unquote. The Plain Truth author says, the hard fact and the problem of the extinction of the dinosaurs, as well as many other forms of life during the time Mesozoic rocks were deposited, is indeed a problem for the theory of evolution, for the theory does not allow for any sudden appearance or disappearance of life forms. Yet the facts of science show this very thing has happened. The facts of historical geology do not agree with the theories of evolutionary geology at all. Then under another subcategory of this Plain Truth article entitled Sudden Appearance of New Forms of Life. This one's interesting. Evolutionary scientists are not only faced with the fact that sudden disappearance of many varied forms of life, but they also have to account for the sudden appearance of new forms of life. The second edition of Dunbar's book, Historical Geology, reveals that, and now here's another quote from this renowned evolutionary professor, quote, G.G. Simpson has said that most dramatic and in many respects the most puzzling event in the history of life on Earth is the change from the Mesozoic age of reptiles to the age of mammals. It is as if the curtain were rung down suddenly on a stage where all the leading roles were taken by reptiles, especially dinosaurs, in great numbers and bewildering variety, and rose again immediately to reveal the same setting, but an entirely new cast. A cast in which the dinosaurs do not appear at all, other reptiles are mere supernumeraries, and the leading parts are all played by mammals. Pretty interesting way to put it. And these are evolutionary scientists who admit this. That's what the Earth shows. The sudden extinction, the raining down of one play with a cast of characters and dinosaurs, and the sudden appearance of mammals. How did that happen? And then our article goes on to say, and on page 404, he states further, quote, throughout the long Mesozoic era, for more than 100 million years, reptiles completely dominated life on the earth, but at its close, their dynasty suddenly collapsed. Turtles, lizards, snakes, and crocodiles survive, but they are mostly small and restricted in their range, and few are aggressive. So again, he's an evolutionist, so he's got to believe that some of these small reptiles made it through the catastrophe. We know they didn't. We just know that God recreated smaller reptiles in the days that he also created man. Our article goes on to say, chaos on Earth 2. Not only do we find the facts of science show a sudden disappearance and appearance of certain life forms, but also the rocks reveal the Earth itself has had radical change in its history. For example, the modern appearance of the surface of the Earth would have been unknown in the Mesozoic era. Every feature, and now here, this is another quote from Dunbar in his massive work called Historical Geology, page 352. Every feature of the modern landscape, these are evolutionary scientists that are admitting this, every feature of the modern landscape was shaped during the last short era of geologic time. The Alps and the Himalayas have come up from the seafloor. The Rocky Mountains have been worn down and then uplifted to their present height. The Appalachian ridges have been etched into relief, and the other mountain ranges of the world have been elevated and sculpted to their present form since the beginning of the Cenozoic era. Isn't that an amazing admission? You think those mountain ranges, not the dirt in the rocks, the dirt in the rocks might be a billion years old. But what these evolutionists admit is the geology shows they didn't turn into these mountains that we have today until the age of the mammals. Fascinating. He goes on to say, Dunbar says, the streams also have attained the courses they now follow, and climate zones have assumed their modern character. This era, the Cenozoic era, saw the modern world unfold. They admit it, that there was a distinction between the ancient world before and all of a sudden this Cenozoic era, this age of the mammals, they call it, including the rise of the mountain ranges. What do we believe is true from Genesis 1 and Genesis 2? Isn't one of the things God did create the dry land? How did that happen except he raised up this earth out of the water, including all of those mountain ranges? And the geologists admit this stuff all happened relatively in recent past, not eons ago. The Plain Truth author says, here again we must distinguish between the facts of science and the theories of evolutionary science. The facts show the modern mountain ranges, climatic zones, animals, and plants are a feature of the geologic time since Adam, the Cenozoic era. However, evolutionary explanations of why or how these changes came about are only their theories. There is a great difference between the theories and the facts of science. Getting close to the end, but a little bit more to read. Sorry, this is a reading sermon. But I think this material in these old articles still says it best. A sub area of our article entitled Present World for Man. Let us now more closely examine why many new forms of life appear in the Cenozoic era with man. Genesis 1 and 2 will again provide the key. Notice the importance of man of these plants and animals that were created with man. The following admission will quickly summarize the usefulness of the plants described in Genesis 1, 11, and 12, which we have noted appeared in the geologic record. They, the angiosperms, or our modern plants, supply nearly all the plant life for the mammals, which also, remember, appeared suddenly at the same time that now dominate all other life upon the earth. Angiosperms provide the nuts and the fruit of the field, the grasses of the prairies, the cereals which furnish fodder and grain for man and for his domestic animals, and all the vegetables and fruit that man has cultivated, to say nothing of the flowers that add so much pleasure and inspiration to human surroundings. Who wrote that? This is a quote from Dunbar in Historical Geology, page 336. This evolutionary scientist recognizes all of this total change in plant life suddenly appeared at the same time the mammals did. Amazing. These plants did not inhabit Lucifer's world before man became Lucifer, and the angels did not need them. God not only created man, but he created with and for man a world suitable for him. Man could not have survived on the earth before this time. The animals and plants man uses for food were not in existence in the pre-Adamic world. When God created man, he also created the necessary animals and plant lives to sustain him. God is indeed a good and gracious provider. In relation to sea life, notice his amazing admission from the book Creation by Evolution. And this is now a citation, I think it's the same evolutionist. It says, quote, "It is also interesting to note that the fishes which achieved these latest developments," meaning thin scales, "include nearly all those that are used for food by man today," from page 131 of the same work, Historical Geology. "As we have seen previously, the modern thin-scaled fish, edible for man, appear in the Cretaceous rocks," meaning those at the very end and the beginning between the eras of reptiles and mammals. Here again, we see scripture wholly backed up by the facts of science. Both the time elements of their appearance and their usefulness to mankind are again confirmed in God's word. The same is true concerning the true birds which appear in the Cretaceous rocks. Birds are very useful to man for food, as in domestic birds, and for holding a check on insects, weeds, seeds, and rodents. The beauty and song of birds were especially designed to please man's senses. The flying reptiles of the pre-Adamic world would hardly appeal to man's taste or compare to the modern birds in usefulness to man. The importance of mammals to man is immense, and the role of providers of food, clothing, and beasts of burden. The importance of mammals to man cannot be overemphasized, but the same could not be said of animals that existed with the dinosaurs in Lucifer's pre-Adamic world. So this says, and the scientists and geologists and paleontologists acknowledge there was a total different kind of plants and animals on the earth. That's the record. You explain what you think that means. In closing today, here's a good summary from this same Plain Truth article from 1963. Still a few paragraphs. Bear with me, but this is coming to the end. Here's the summary. Quote, "This great battle for the control of the universe caused great destruction upon the earth. Animal and plant life of the types that then lived were destroyed, rapidly buried, and fossilized." I'm going to stop right there and say, what I find fascinating is that we depend on this modern world today on fossil fuels, don't we? What would we be without fossil fuels? Because this eco-environment of electricity and wind and solar, it don't work without fossil fuels backing it up. Where do the fossil fuels come from? From fossils. Fossil from where? The strata of the pre-Adamic world. It was from the age of reptiles. So all of the oil that everyone fights over today is actually was produced from the compression of this sudden extinction of everything that happened in the age of reptiles during the Luciferic Rebellion. And today, it's significant for you and me because that's the source of our energy that we use to power in a modern society. So pretty interesting connection between the past and the present. But anyway, that's not listed in this article, but I wanted to inset that. "The earth became chaotic and void," as Genesis 1:2 is more properly rendered. "Life was taken from the earth so that when God rebuilt the surface of the earth and created man and the many new life forms described in Genesis 1 and 2, God commanded man to replenish or repopulate the earth." It's Genesis 1:28. The word replenish literally means to refill and would not have been used if life had not been on the earth in an age before Adam. The same word is used in Genesis 9 verse 1 after the flood in Noah's time had completely destroyed all animal life except that which survived on the ark. The earth had to once again be replenished at the time of Noah. Thus, this sin of angels was therefore before the time of Adam's creation. And again, that's the key point that these young earth creationists do not get. The sin of angels happened before. And that was a separate catastrophe that happened on the surface of this earth before man was ever brought into existence. Continuing, remember, it was very soon after Adam's creation that Satan tempted Eve. In Genesis chapter 3, Lucifer had already fallen. Remember also that it was on the first day of creation, shortly before the creation of man, that the earth was without form and void. Genesis 1:2. The first 6 days recorded in Genesis 1 describe the surface of the earth being reformed out of a chaotic condition. Yet, Isaiah 45:18 plainly tells us that God did not create the world in the condition of void wasteland. The earth became chaotic at the rebellion of Satan before the creation of man. The truth now becomes clear. The earth had been populated by various forms of plants and animal life before Adam. At the rebellion of Lucifer against the authority of God, the earth was thrown into chaos, and a time of great dying and a time of trial ensued. Many animals vanished from the earth at the end of Mesozoic, never again to be found in the latter rock strata. God did not give man a hostile reptilian world filled with dinosaurs to inhabit. Instead, he provided man with a special creation suited for man and his needs, unquote. So there's my best, I'm telling you, believe it or not, that's a really condensed summary of what we believe supports our conclusion from the Bible, that there was an original catastrophe at the rebellion of angels, very separate and distinct from a later catastrophe initiated by God through the flood and in the days of Noah. So next time, we're going to see more details about what the geology says, in particular, about Noah's flood.
The Church of God, the Eternal, has just presented the 62nd message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled, Just What Do You Mean, Faith Once Delivered? Given in Eugene, Oregon, June 3rd, 2023.